Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Curtis Krishnire, and today we're going to talk about the start of the Great Depression, and it's actually the 95th anniversary this week of what really helped trigger the Great Depression, which was the Great Miami Hurricane of 1926. It was the hurricane that effectively ended the Florida land boom and the 1920s land boom, and absolutely wrought devastation on the southern portion of the peninsula, which had been kind of the symbol of the Roaring Twenties. I mean, we think of things like the Great Gatsby and the casinos in Las Vegas. Also, Florida was another place which was kind of the epicenter of the excesses of the Roaring Twenties. So the Miami hurricane of 1926 was not carefully observed as it came across the Atlantic. And because it had interacted with very little land, we didn't get reports out of Puerto Rico or Hispaniola or Cuba necessarily about the storm, which made things that much worse. Observation of a lower barometric pressure, some sort of tropical cyclone off of Martinique on September 11th, 1926. Now, as we realize in hindsight, the Great Miami Hurricane was, and remember, they didn't name hurricanes back then, so I believe it was the fifth or sixth storm of tropical cyclone of that season, of the 1926 season. We now know it became a major hurricane, a Category 3 storm, north of the Virgin Islands. But again, it took an interesting path. It missed the Lesser Antilles. It went north. It was a Cape Verde storm, traditional August-September Cape Verde storm, but did not interact with Puerto Rico directly, did not interact with Hispaniola, did not interact with Cuba, came right across the Bahamas. And that's when we began to get some reports as to the storm's potential problems. And what happened when it went through the Bahamas is it maintained its formidable strength. It was a Category 4 storm by this point, and it didn't slow down. So there was not enough warning in southern Florida, and these were heady days. So the storm makes landfall. Let's talk about the storm itself, the meteorological history in Florida. It makes landfall September 18th around what's now Cutler Bay, that area. So Pinecrest, Cutler Bay, somewhere in that area of South Dade County, about 15 miles south of Miami, of downtown Miami. And the top sustained winds were 145 miles per hour. Barometric pressure was down to 930 millibars. There were hurricane force winds that reached all the way from the Upper Keys, Isla Mirada area, all the way north to the southern part of St. Lucie County. So what is now Port St. Lucie, a little north of Stewart, that whole area, that whole hurricane wind field, that it was a big storm. Very unique for that era. So even though you had intense storms, you had Category 4s, you had Cat 5s, we've talked about the 1935 Labor Day storm, the strongest storm to ever hit the continental United States. That was a very small storm. So that storm, even though the central pressure was 882 millibars, the maximum sustained winds were about 200 miles per hour. Areas, it was very tight, sort of somewhat like Hurricane Charlie and Hurricane Andrew were when they hit the state. The Great Miami Hurricane was not like that. It had a large wind field like Hurricane Irma or some of the other hurricanes that have hit the state that have been kind of larger wind fields. Wilma is a good example of that, that have not necessarily been that kind of intense, all the intensity layered around the center. So the storm buzzes through the southern peninsula of Florida, makes its way into the Gulf of Mexico, where it was able to re-intensify to a Cat 3. It had weakened to a Cat 2 storm over land, and it ended up making a second landfall near the the Florida-Alabama border, Perdido Beach, which is right on the Alabama side of the border. Pensacola's on the other side. As a Cat 3 storm, what we would modern storm would be a Cat 3. So what had happened in terms of prep was that once the storm hit the Bahamas, the Weather Bureau started to make people aware that there was a storm coming, and they made a storm warning on September 17th for the Florida coast from Key West to Jupiter. Now, this would end up being a day before the storm would hit, so it wasn't that much prep time. Eventually, they raised warning flags all the way up the beach to Charleston, South Carolina. And unfortunately, there just wasn't enough time. People weren't paying attention. And what it resulted was, adjusted for inflation, the costliest Atlantic hurricane to ever hit the continental United States. Adjusted for inflation, more costly than Katrina, more costly than Andrew, more costly than Sandy, more costly than Harvey, and more costly than every other storm. And by far, when adjusted for inflation, basically twice as much direct economic losses due to this storm than the next closest hurricane, which would have been the 1900 Galveston storm and then Katrina. Those are pretty close in terms of, if you adjust for inflation, the losses. The 1926 Miami hurricane, twice as much. So that's why we're talking about the Great Depression. So let's transition to that. We've talked previously on the podcast about all the land speculators and all of the hucksters, everybody who came to Florida to make a quick buck, right? During the 1920s, it was the Roaring Twenties. It was a boom time. Florida was that last frontier. The frontier officially closed in 1890, but Florida is the place you can come and the place of get-rich-quick schemes. People would argue it still is. So the damage and lasting impacts on the Miami metropolitan area hastened the start of the Great Depression. The effects were really dramatic. There would probably be, if we're realistic about it, they had very conservative estimates at the time, but if we're realistic about it, the death toll was probably higher than what was reported, as were the number of injuries. So there have been estimates. The official death toll from the storm was between 400 and 600. There have been estimates it was actually probably closer to 1,000, and there were probably a lot more injuries. So that's of course, the human loss of life. Not as bad as the Okeechobee storm, obviously. That would come in 1928. We haven't done a show on that yet, but we will in time. And that's one of the great tragedies, maybe the greatest tragedy in Florida history, which it killed, the Okeechobee hurricane killed about 2,000 people at least. I think the official death toll from the Okeechobee hurricane is 1,836, which matches the official death toll for Katrina, ironically enough, in the United States. So it's probably actually much higher. So what you ended up happening were about 40,000 people were displaced in one form or another by the storm. You had had a huge storm surge that which kind of walloped the areas of South Dade County. Now that's Biscayne Bay, remember, that comes in there. Perrine, Cutler Bay, Cutler Ridge, Pinecrest, South Miami, those are those areas now. Perrine was there then, right? And Goulds was there, that was an agricultural community. So there were, huge storm surge came in there. There was a huge storm surge that came in from the ocean side to Miami Beach, which was the hot place in the 1920s, one of the hot places nationally, and into Miami also. City streets were flooded, yachts and large vessels, there are these dramatic images of them being pushed into the city streets. There was also an image of the bridge over Baker's Hall over Inlet, which is between Bal Harbour and Sunny Isles. Pieces of that bridge being blown away. There were at Dinner Key in Coconut Grove about a 12-foot storm surge, similar on Biscayne Boulevard in downtown Miami. It's the highest documented storm surge in the history of southern Florida. And that record would last through the Okeechobee Hurricane. It would last through the 1947 Fort Lauderdale Hurricane. That's another significant event in the history of South Florida, the Great Fort Lauderdale Hurricane that did a lot of damage from really from Homestead all the way north into Palm Beach County. And it stood till Hurricane Andrew. There was a storm surge of about 17 feet recorded near where Burger King's world headquarters used to be. Along close to the water, Biscayne Bay in South Miami in 1992 during Hurricane Andrew. But Burger King's still based in the Miami area. They're based now across in the Blue Lagoon area across from Miami International Airport. So that was the damage. There were a lot of skyscrapers that had been built in Miami between 1919 and 1926. They didn't sustain as much damage. They were built pretty well, to a good standard, but most of the wooden buildings in Miami were either torn down or lost their roof. There was no power, no communication for days into Miami. Going a little further north into Broward County, the Broward County Courthouse was damaged. The roof blew off of it. 3,500 buildings were seriously damaged in Fort Lauderdale. And Fort Lauderdale was not a big place in the 1920s. Fort Lauderdale's growth spurt would come a little later. By the time of the 47 hurricane, which I mentioned a little earlier, Fort Lauderdale was a pretty substantial place. And that was a serious, as I said, a very serious event in the history of South Florida. And in fact, maybe a little teaser for when we talk about that storm in the future. The 1947 Fort Lauderdale hurricane was the impetus for the Army Corps of Engineers to do a lot more damage to the Everglades ecosystem than they had already done in the teens and 20s with Tamiami Trail and all the canals and channelization of things to Lake Okeechobee and the culverts. And then obviously the damage that came from the Okeechobee storm in 1928. But the 47 hurricane, the Fort Lauderdale hurricane, as we call it, it's funny, these storms didn't have names. So we had already, in lore, called the 26 hurricane the Miami hurricane. So we end up calling the 47 hurricane the Fort Lauderdale hurricane, although I think it did not make landfall. The eye did not make landfall in Fort Lauderdale, just like the 26 hurricane, the eye did not make landfall in Miami. But we had to name these things. There was also a Homestead hurricane from 1944, which did make landfall in Homestead, by the way. But that's the kind of the naming of the storms before they were given first phonetic alphabet names in 1950, then Greek alphabet names, and then finally our conventional naming convention of female names in 1956. 1979, they added male names, and right away we had Hurricane David that hit our area of South Florida and also impacted the Caribbean, but eventually made landfall near Savannah. In Georgia, one of the only storms to make landfall on the Georgia coast in the last 120 years. That was the first significant hurricane with a male name, Hurricane David in 1979. So anyway, getting back to the damage reports from Fort Lauderdale, waves were several feet high and were rolling up Las Olas Boulevard, which had the appearance of a river rather than a street. Practically the entire town was covered with 3 feet of water. M.A. Hort, who was the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, said this after the storm. Now, here's another quote. "We had never been through a hurricane in 1926 when we experienced our first one. We didn't know that all the windows should be covered in a hurricane." That's where the tradition of taping the windows comes from. "I was watching as railroad cars were being knocked off the tracks and telegraph poles were snapped like toothpicks. Immediately, almost all the windows on the top floor were broken." This was Floy Cook Mitchell, the wife of the former Boca Raton mayor, J.C. Mitchell. And so Boca Raton had a lot of damage also. There were Many roofs blown off buildings in Lake Worth and also in West Palm Beach. And unfortunately, this is a common theme of these hurricanes. The worst damage for much of this storm were in the African-American neighborhoods in Palm Beach, in Fort Lauderdale, Coconut Grove, which was a historically African-American community at the time. Dinner Key had that record surge that we talked about earlier, and also some of the agricultural communities where there were African-Americans in southern Dade County. So some other damage reports. I mentioned the bridge on A1A, or what became named A1A later, over Baker's Hall, over inlet. The Barrier Island in Boca, there's some hills where the beach is in Boca Raton now. And if you've explored that area, you know there's some sand dunes and hills. The storm surge actually topped those hills. You had the casino in Boca Raton, the Boca Raton Hotel is destroyed. Or severely damaged. They rebuilt it after. That was a heady time in Boca Raton, also the 1920s, much like it was in Miami. The Lake Worth Lagoon overflowed its banks, and there were all kinds of animals and creatures on the streets in West Palm Beach. And in Palm Beach, Hollywood Beach Hotel, which is where now you have Margaritaville, the Jimmy Buffett Resort, that got severely damaged. All the glass was knocked out, everything in that. And then there was damage in the Everglades. There was significant damage on the west coast of Florida. And then, obviously, there was a second landfall, as we talked about, which was right over the line in Alabama. But Pensacola got badly affected. Obviously, they would have been in the northeastern quadrant, the strongest part of the storm. 14-foot storm surge in Pensacola Bay, and almost all of the waterfront structures on Pensacola Bay were destroyed. Now, remember, there's Pensacola Bay and there's Escambia Bay. But on Escambia Bay, there were some there were some high tides too, and the much of the rain also. They got a lot more rain in the Panhandle and in the Gulf Coast of Alabama that got affected, close to 15 inches of rain that sat on the ground. So what ends up happening after the storm? You have lots of looting going on, including in those African-American areas that I mentioned were badly affected. Martial law was declared, and the Coolidge administration sent the U.S. Army and the Coast Guard down, and so you have an official toll of 372 fatalities in Florida for the storm. It was almost certainly much higher. So what ends up happening? What is the economic impact as we talk about? So this was kind of the final straw for the Florida land boom. There had been an incident in 1925 where there was a sinking of a ship in the harbor of Miami. There was some issues with the Florida East Coast Railroad, Henry Flagler's old railroad. And so the land boom was beginning to subside anyway, but then the hurricane did it. All the damage we talked about, twice as much as when adjusted for inflation as any other storm in American history, any other Atlantic hurricane. Tons of people there's a run on the banks in Florida. People pull their money out. They renege on their claims to land. And there were banks that just started to go belly up in Florida. In South Florida in particular, beginning in late 1926, early 1927. Now, keep in mind, this is 2 years before the real run on banks nationally, but it's starting, and it spreads, right? Like everything, we even saw this in the Great Recession of 2008. When this sort of thing happens, it spreads, and there's a run on banks, there's panic, and people generally are not patient with this sort of thing, and they think it's going to be... the end of times in a way. So there's a run on banks. There are new developments. Obviously, the George Merrick's development of Coral Gables had just opened. The University of Miami had just opened. That's why the sports teams at the University of Miami were called the Hurricanes, because their first sporting events were postponed because of this hurricane. And Coral Gables had just opened. Coral Gables then doesn't quite develop the way that Merrick had wanted to on the same trajectory. Addison Meisner had a huge planned community around Boca Raton. Obviously, he was already developing Boca. We know about his role with the Boca Raton Hotel, etc., that were abandoned completely by the hurricane. And there were other land schemes that were pulled out of land schemes that were going on, land development, new communities that were being built, including in South Dade County, in the areas near Goulds, the Redlands, that were completely abandoned. Aladdin City was one of them. And then also further north in Dade and Broward counties. And then we mentioned Boca. South Florida didn't actually recover until the war, World War II. So you have the Depression starting in South Florida about two and a half years before it began nationally. And it was a trigger to spread this sort of panic and run on banks and run on credit, and a bunch of people going belly up, banks going out, land speculators losing all sorts of money. It ends up spreading and becoming a national problem and eventually an international problem that led to the Great Depression. So that was the 1926 Miami hurricane, more than just a meteorological event, more than just a devastating hurricane, but a huge, huge economic calamity, the likes of which have been very rarely repeated by natural disasters in American history. Thank you once again for listening to the Florida History Podcast. We'll be back with you next week.